Hey everybody, I'm Corbin.
And I'm Camry.
And we are siblings reconnecting with the joy of our Disney-filled childhood. Join us as we discuss, debate, and rediscover the second star to the right. This is The Neverland Files. Welcome back, everyone.
This is the last Mandalorian episode.
I'm pretty excited about this. Season 2 wrapping up with Chapter 16, The Rescue, which that title is helpful for me. That makes a little bit... It's just easy for me to understand what's going on.
Let me give you a play-by-play. Guys, this could be rough. Let me give you a play-by-play on this. We get like the first few seconds and then they go, The Mandalorian, and I yell out loud. I'm like, if this doesn't say The Rescue, I'm going to be mad. And it said The Rescue, and I was already hooting and hollering. So that's just basically how the whole episode was.
Can I tell you, with The Mandalorian, I guess I can because it's our podcast, but with The Mandalorian, this particular chapter, well, all previous chapters in the season two, I just would wait. I would sometimes wait 2 or 3 or 4 days to watch it.
Yeah, you would, you punk. Up.
But then with chapter 16, I had a project that I was working on. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stay up late. It comes out at 1 o'clock Mountain Time, and I watched it at 1 o'clock Mountain Time all by myself, and I was fist pumping throughout in the dark.
Yay! I feel validated then by my reaction. Though I remember I was so mad because we had talked about this because you're like, Camry, it comes out 1 a.m. I'm like, Corbin, I have to go to work tomorrow. I can't stay up that late. I wake up and you texted me at like 2 and you were like, wow. And I'm like, you punk, you watched it first. Oh, I'm mad.
This was the only occurrence in which I watched it before you, so I don't feel bad at all. I don't feel guilty. And you would text me about it too. You'd be like, have you seen it yet? And it's just like, okay.
No, I was very nice because we have a family group text and I would just be like, hey, has everybody watched it? And everyone would say whether they hadn't, so I wouldn't say anything. And once we had clearance that we'd all watched it, then we'd start with the gifts. And
here's the important question though for you. It previously, when it came to new Star Wars films, mm-hmm. you have found out, you have read about what happens before you go and see the film.
Yes.
Did you do that with this particular chapter? Did you read an article or something to find out what happened, or did you watch it without any knowledge of what?
Before everyone starts yelling at me and telling me how awful of a person I am, let me explain.
Oh, no,
the situation.
You did it again. Oh.
And Corbin thinks that this is not valid. I went and saw Force Awakens the night it opened and I could like literally not sleep for a week because I was like so overwhelmed by the experience. It was amazing, but I was like consumed. So the best way I found to handle it was with Rise of Skywalker. I was like, I just need to know basic plot points so I know what I'm getting into. And I will tell you, it was just as enjoyable to go and watch it in the theater. I don't recommend everyone do that, but I did do that for the last movie that came out.
So with chapter 16...
Chapter 16, I did not because it is 40 minutes and it was like, and you specifically told me not to. So you were like, look, don't look. So you had already seen it. So I was like, okay, I think I'll be able to handle this. Cause I feel like if it had been really super tragic, you wouldn't have been so like, it's going to be okay. Just watch it. So I didn't look and I enjoyed it. I do it both ways. And there's only a couple instances I've ever done it was, and it was with The Rise of Skywalker. So don't kill me.
Yeah, and I as soon as I was done watching it, I jumped on. I just Googled it really fast, and people were already like responding on Twitter, like, "Oh my gosh!" And I was like, "Oh, that would ruin it, right?" Like that reveal, the moment of the Jedi and all that stuff with Luke would ruin
it. Wow, Corbin. So,
anywho, let's jump into it, shall we?
Let's do it.
Okay, so we start off this chapter by Mando going around and recruiting his dream team, right?
And yes, which we kind of predicted would happen.
Yeah, and we were excited, right? We want to get all these awesome, amazing loose ends together to combat Moff Gideon here.
Yes.
And so he and I found it interesting, the interaction between Boba and Bo-Katan. And whose side are you on? As you watch this chapter, who are you becoming more and more interested in and excited about?
I'll be honest, I'm a little over Bo-Katan. She's kind of starting to get on my nerves a little bit.
Isn't it? Really?
Yeah, I'm just
it
like,
is.
And I'm wondering if it's supposed to be that way, because it would be interesting to see her maybe in future seasons kind of become the antagonist. And we'll talk about why coming up. But I will say, when they were kind of sitting there and they were like, kind of like getting under Boba's skin, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, you don't know who you're dealing with. I was surprised how well her friend handled herself against Boba, though. That was interesting, because it was like, okay, they're both legit. They both have skills, but I'm still on Boba's side. I'm like, Bo-Katan, get a life.
Well, when I saw how she handled Boba, or how they were fighting, and it was, you know, it was going back and forth, I was like, hold on, this isn't real. Like, Boba's definitely the superior warrior here. But then I had to remind myself that he is how old? Like 80
he's
years old.
Oh, he's not 80. He's probably in his 50s. He's old, and he was in a Sarlacc pit, so he's probably a little damaged, doesn't have as great of reaction time.
So
but
his
it's definitely
technical
not Boba
age,
in his prime.
His technical age is probably 50s, because he was in the digestive system of some beast. He's probably in his 80s. So I was like, that makes sense. But yeah, I agree with you. I'm getting a little bit wary and a little bit fatigued by this obsession by Bo-Katan.
Yeah. And I love, and if we go back, like, I remember being really excited when she showed up and I enjoyed her in that episode. But I, this episode, for whatever reason, I was just kind of like, yeah, I'm done.
So in The Mandalorian, they've done a really good job of blending in all these different characters who have different motives, right? Obviously, Bo-Katan, it's the dark saber. With Boba Fett, it's like he promised that he would help find Grogu. So they've got all these different motivations, but at the center of it is just this affection for and love of Grogu, right? Like, everyone wants to protect this little creature.
Which, can you blame them? I mean, let's be honest. They couldn't have picked a different species to play this force sensitive child, because if it's not a child that, like, I'm not being serious, but if they'd pick like a species that doesn't have a cute, that doesn't look cute,
like
everyone would be like, what's the big deal? Yeah, they're like, it's like a baby Admiral Akbar. It's like, ugh,
oh, that's kind of cute, but you just wouldn't take him seriously.
Yeah. But in this case, like, they designed him so well that I don't know of a human being on this planet who is a Star Wars fan or not, who does not think that child is adorable. Like, that's so, how far reaching this child's ability is it's like unifying the world, which can't be unified on anything.
So this has heavy consequences, because if Grogu ever comes to the realization that everyone is under his power, essentially, he could rival the Emperor, right?
Oh,
like, everyone, he is so lovable, and everyone will. So if it takes a turn for the worst, it could get a little scary.
That's
but
the
I
dumbest
agree.
Thing I've ever heard. Oh, but yeah, I'm with
you. Wow. I actually take that as a compliment, if it's the dumbest thing ever. Okay. So we take our ride on Slave One, which again is phenomenal.
It
anytime
just gets better
here,
and better. Every time we're in that ship, I'm just like, I should not love this like I do, because Boba is not a nice person and this ship is creepy as all get out, but it's amazing.
Yeah, how many like frozen carbonite free people have been in that vehicle? But who cares, right? Like, this is great. And I hope, part of me is like, of all the Disneyland Star Wars things that are out there, potential ideas, Slave One, to me, I mean, Millennium Falcon is pretty, it's up there, right? Like, in terms of a ride with the Millennium Falcon, but Slave One, I think there's some potential there. I don't think they'll do it, but I that's just how cool Slave One is. But they track down Dr. Pershing. How they find him, I don't know, don't care. Let's move on. They track down Dr. Pershing, and there was this really interesting interaction between these pilots of this shuttle and Mando and Boba, Cara Dune. And you're like, man, there are a lot of, and this is normal, right, in our society, but there are a lot of people out there that are adamant about something that they don't even know why they're doing it, right?
I think again, like, this plays so well to that episode that we had with Mayfeld, where you get this feeling that there's this big beast called the Empire, and there are so many different degrees of what it means to be an Imperial. Because we keep running into people who are like, look, like that one pilot, he's like, look, I'm
out.
Tell you, like, whatever you want. Yeah. Like, I put me where I'm totally good. And these other guy who is probably friends with the crazy Texas guy from last episode, who was just like, I'm more afraid of you than I am of the Emperor. This guy's a creep.
Yeah.
Who is just so fanatical about the Empire. And so it's so fun to see them expand that conversation of, this isn't a good and bad story. These are people who all make decisions, and some of them are good and some of them are bad, and some of them are imperial and some of them are nothing, and some of them are part of the New Republic. It just is the layers that they're adding to the Star Wars tapestry. It's just awesome.
Yeah. And it was pretty apparent that this guy's going to get a laser bolt to the face, you know, which happens, right?
Don't mess with Cara Dune, folks. Yeah. What a puke to be twisting that knife in the back of, like, all of your people were blown up in Alderaan and stuff. I was just like, this guy is disgusting. He's got,
you know, when someone starts trash talking like this, you just don't care what happens, right? Like, just do whatever you want.
There's a low blow. That was so low.
Like, there's a certain point where all the things that you've done in the past, the group you're associated with, those are forgivable. But when you start talking and taunting about it, that's when it crosses the line. So we're happy about that. And it also kind of enhances the, Cara Dune, she obviously in previous episodes has demonstrated that she's capable. But in my opinion, that moment just kind of shows that she's not messing around and she's not to be trifled with, right? Like this, she's a serious soldier warrior.
And here's the thing. I think she gave him ample opportunities to shut his mouth and stop being an idiot. Yeah. And he would not knock it off. And part of you is like, oh man, like Cara Dune, right? Like she's an official New Republic marshal. Like she is somebody who has a badge and who has authority. And even she, like, was that the right decision to kill that guy? I don't know. Is it justifiable? I don't know. But again, this conversation about someone who is officially on the good side, but still has that gray moral area.
Yeah. So to take that from, so you talked about like the good side, Dr. Pershing is again, another layer of that, right? Where they capture him and they're starting to formulate this plan. How are they going to get on to Moff Gideon's light cruiser? How are they going to get Grogu back? And all of a sudden, Dr. Pershing's just kicking in information, right? Like, here, this
Which, to be fair, I feel like this has been very in character with him. And every time we see him, he's very much kind of like, I'm a scientist and I just happen to be working for them.
Exactly.
I'm not for their cause. I'm a scientist.
They're paying the bills. Yep. And I can see now that I'm not getting a paycheck anymore from these folks. So I'm okay with giving you whatever information you need, because I've been a reluctant participant, and now
he's always been very sympathetic towards Grogu. Like there's always been a concern for him about the well-being of the child. So that, again, like, I think it was cool to see that still continue, because we haven't seen him very often this season.
Yeah. So which takes us to the scene of Boba Fett following the shuttle, Bo-Katan, the rest of the crew are in the shuttle. And I really liked this concept here of going through hyperspace, appearing, and then having Boba Fett shooting at them. I thought this was very clever. And it's not like anything that we haven't seen before or anything like that. But just the way that they presented it and the way that they had Boba Fett obviously just destroyed those TIE fighters. I mean, those guys didn't have a chance.
Again, we see the miraculousness of Slave One. Like, really, in the original trilogy, this ship looked cool, but you never got to see it in action. And it is so fun to continue to get to see how amazing this ship is.
He's flying through space and shooting the TIE fighters behind him. He's all by himself, right? So this is like the equivalent of a guy playing basketball who is running backward or running forward and then throwing the ball over his head and it's swishing, right?
Yeah. He's just amazing. I hate that it's called Slave One. Like, it makes it on me uncomfortable every time I say it, because you just get that negative connotation because you know what kind of a guy Boba is, but you just can't deny that, like, whoever designed these ships is a genius. And why aren't there more of them out there in the galaxy? Like, this should be a model that everyone's picking out at the spaceship dealership.
And that's the great thing about Star Wars, because they're not like a bunch of Americans that are like, ooh, that's cool and special. Let's all buy it. So now it's not special anymore.
Let's go to the Slave One dealership and pick one out in purple and pink.
Servitude dealership. So it comes in. I love how it jumps into hyperspace, into the scene, and then immediately jumps out when it's like, obviously, Boba's finished his part of the deal. At that point, I think if I was every Imperial person on that light cruiser, I'd be like,
what just happened?
Something's going on here, right?
Like, wait a minute.
He shows up, he shoots a few times, and then leaves real fast. Like, what?
So, I will say this. I loved the way they kind of pushed the Star Destroyer a little further in design on this one. How you have the TIE fighters shooting out the front, that like front tracking lane. That's the ride that I want. Slave One would be cool, but I want the ride that puts you back into the place where the TIE fighters are and shoots you out into the galaxy. Like that scene, it was so amazing. We all kind of like got the giggles when that scene happened. It was like, oh, this is exciting.
I don't want them to do that ride because my tummy couldn't handle it, so I'd miss out.
It's okay, Corbin. We'll just we'll shoot you up with something for like motion sickness. Get you on at once and you can experience it in a dazed state.
It was cool though. So they bring the shuttle in and then we have our little team here. What did you think of the team, these four characters?
It was so awesome. Like I was sitting there thinking, and I know that like people are like, oh my gosh, like women are taking over the world and like stop pushing it down my throat. Like it makes me feel uncomfortable. But I was sitting there and it wasn't in your face, but it was a couple minutes of me watching them and I was like, oh my gosh, these four women, like it's just four girls and they're kicking trash, man. I don't love them all equally. I like some more than others, but it was just cool to that they like just kind of subtly were able to do that and it wasn't a big deal. And I was like, heck yes, this is awesome. Like, this why is this such a big deal? It shouldn't be a big deal. It should just be something that can happen and not be a big deal.
Yeah. And I am curious, and I think some of these characters will probably be faded out of The Mandalorian just based on other stories and series that they have going on.
Yeah.
But I will be interested to see if they continue to show up. How they will jockey for position in terms of who we like the most, right?
Yeah,
these
for sure.
Side characters, because from episode to episode, they kind of take different places. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, for sure. I would agree with that. And I mean, it goes to show you, I think at this point, we've been pretty not happy with Moff Gideon and the Dark Troopers. We've kind of been like, meh. But I think they did a good job in this episode of showing how threatening the Dark Troopers actually are. Because when Mando goes and has his one-on-one fight with one, you get the feeling of like, he's not going to make it out of this alive. And there's only one. So yeah. It was good that they really set up that thing of like, these are dangerous and you have the best bounty hunters in the galaxy and he can't even handle one by himself.
And there's then, a whole platoon.
Yeah, but on the other end of that, where the girls are just totally taking out the stormtroopers, you're like, man, these stormtroopers are so dumb. No wonder they want to replace them with something else because their training is so awful.
Well, you remember Dr. Pershing, he said that we eliminated the weakest part of the Dark Trooper, which was the human being inside of them. Yep. And I would say, okay, hold on. It sounds like you're recruiting some of the least desirable human beings to probably work these Dark Troopers, because if you're recruiting the same type of characteristics that are in a stormtrooper, that's not going to work out. So it makes sense why they went the robot route, but I totally agree. And just watching that Dark Trooper bash the face of Mando,
see, and I think that's the human aspect they took out, right? Is that utter ruthlessness, because I think you can find that occasion. I think they could probably find it occasionally in certain people that they put in the suit, but they couldn't get that level of ruthlessness consistently where you don't care about this living person that you're beating the crap out of. Your punches will never be pulled and I will continue to beat the crap out of you until you're a pile of mush. So I think that's like the human aspect they were taking out, is that hesitation of like,
yeah,
I think I'm overdoing it.
Well, it's always that the extremes of, you've got these people that are incredible soldiers, but they have a conscience, right?
Yeah.
Like where they're like, I can't do this. And then you have the freak shows that are unhinged that no one can control.
Yeah.
And so having that, the machine aspect where there's no conscience, there's just objective, right? Like mm-hmm. I will destroy whoever's threatening our ship or whatever. And just seeing them just constantly bashing, which also demonstrates the sheer strength of Beskar, right? Like that mask was taking a beating and it didn't flinch.
Because those are the same fists that knocked down the blaster door at the end of the episode. Like, that's what they sat and punched at that wall for like 5 minutes and it opened. Yeah. And so, yeah, again, that was a good point. Like, we got that full effect of how tough the Dark Troopers are, but how amazing the Beskar is at the same time.
I want to know, this is a total side point, but I want to know where Beskar is coming from. Like, where are they mining?
Why aren't we mining that a little more frequently?
Well, it's got to be like so scarce. Like, it's just so precious.
Like,
you know?
Captain America's shield.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What they say is like 0.2% in the whole universe or something, and they found it to make his ship blah, 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 whatever. Anyways, this is not a Marvel thing. This is Star Wars. Then Mando. Obviously, he opens the door. The Dark Troopers go flying out into outer space.
Maybe I wasn't paying attention, but I didn't realize that was the plan for him to open the door so they flew out into space.
Well,
I was
actually, the original plan was that he was supposed to get by them first, get Grogu, and get out of there before the Dark Troopers were
activated.
Up.
Yeah.
They activated so quickly, and that's why he's like, no, because he was like freaking out, like, I don't want to deal with these guys, right? And so,
for good reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy smokes, opening
that door, they're gone. But at the same time, when I watched that, I was like, they're robots. I'm predicting, and it was so predictable, but it was one of those moments where it's like, okay, they're gone for now, but I'm always wary, right? Like, something's going to happen here that they could potentially show up again, maybe in future episodes, not in 10 minutes.
They're like hanging on to Boba Fett's ship. They're like,
So then, fortunately, we didn't have to watch Mando fight that platoon by himself, because
he would have been dead in 5 seconds. I'm sorry. Yeah. Mando's amazing, but there was no way.
Yeah.
No way.
That takes us to the interaction between Mando and Moff Gideon, which we have been anticipating for multiple episodes now, where we're like, show
we
us something.
Showdown.
Something, Moff Gideon.
So, Corbin, what are your feelings coming away from it? How do you feel about Moff Gideon?
So Moff Gideon, he, in terms of threat, he came up a couple notches.
I would agree with that.
But yeah. I still don't see him as this. Obviously, they don't want to build him up so much that you're like, why isn't he the emperor, right? Like, sometimes you can do that with some of these characters where you make them so amazing that you're kind of like, why is he not all in charge? So I think they've done a good job of balancing that. So he did go up a couple notches, but he's also still not to that point where I'm like, this guy's unbeatable.
Okay, so he went up a couple notches for me too, and in the sense of manipulation, because I think the last half of that episode where Moff Gideon is involved, you realize that especially when you find out that Mando now has the Darksaber because he gets it from Moff Gideon, I think that he planned that. Like, I think he kind of goaded Mando into fighting him, because we find out that Bo-Katan can't just take the Darksaber from Mando. She has to win it from him. And so that opens up a whole other can of worms. And I think we may see in next season that maybe Moff Gideon has kind of served his purpose in being like kind of the main antagonist. Maybe he'll still be around, like, because he's been captured. So he'll give information to the New Republic and maybe manipulate in that sense.
Yeah.
But I am actually wondering if Bo-Katan may kind of take on that more antagonistical role against Mando, because Mando has something that she wants desperately, but she also has a conscience and she doesn't know what to do about it.
I think this is an interesting concept, because this would again refocus the story back on Mandalore and Mandalorians.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which it's very easy, based on where the direction this episode or this chapter went, to kind of get lost with Jedi again, right?
Yeah.
And that's not the point, right? Like, the story is about Mandalore, and I think Bo-Katan, or even if Moff Gideon knows that there's some type of personal connection, negative connection to Mandalore, where he is trying to make sure that they are always... never, you know, that they're always ruled
suppressed
by the Empire,
and they never
suppressed,
come back,
right?
To, yeah.
So maybe this is a concept of that. I think that's a really interesting idea that you brought up there.
Well, and I'm wondering if Moff Gideon even like really cared about the Darksaber for the Darksaber and Mandalore. I'm wondering if he just saw it as a tool to manipulate Bo-Katan And it just happened to also fit into Mando's narrative as well, that he was able to use it as a tool. And now that he saw that he got the blood from Grogu and he got what he needed there, and that he was able to put Bo-Katan in a position where she's now hesitating about trying to get the Darksaber, that he kind of feels like he did what he needed to do.
So,
in that sense, like, I have a little more respect for Moff Gideon in that, like, this guy's a lot smarter than we think he is. But I'm also wondering that maybe he's kind of served his purpose moving forward.
In regard to Mando in this circumstance, when he was trying to hand Bo-Katan the Darksaber, he's just like, just take it, right? Yeah. And we're seeing this continued evolution in small bits and pieces of Mando in terms of this idea of the code or the way, where he is recognizing, yes, there are rules and like culture and norms and things like that, but he's getting more and more flexible with that, where he's like, you know what? I don't want this. I don't care what the code is, what the, you know, what the history says about the Darksaber, just please take it. Right.
Yeah.
And I think this is also lends itself to a very interesting development in terms of him personally. And I'm becoming more, in previous episodes, I've been hesitant about this idea of taking off the helmet. Like, we don't need that. But the more I see this development and evolution of himself, I'm getting more comfortable with this idea that in future episodes, he might go the whole episode without the helmet on. Right. Because he's starting to recognize, you know what? I lived the code. It was important for me. I was disciplined, all these things. But at this point in my life, it's not the most important thing.
I'm also wondering if, because to be fair, the Mandalorian code that Mando has been living since he was a child
is extreme.
Is extreme. And it's also not this, it may be a little different than the code that like Bo-Katan grew up, even though she was also part of the extremist group.
Yeah.
Because it was directly on Mandalore. And I'm wondering if like these pop-up creeds that have taken in foundlings, if that may have like shifted a few things around a little bit. So I think he's definitely, as you said, realizing that there are different ways to live as a Mandalorian. It's just a matter of him finding kind of how he fits now, right? Because I don't know, maybe I don't understand the Mandalorian creed, but I even feel like being a bounty hunter was kind of pushing it, because there isn't a lot of honor in being a bounty hunter. But I don't know, maybe I'm looking at that wrong. So you're right, like, I think I didn't have a problem with him taking the helmet off previously, but you're right, they're writing him in such a way that the evolution is working and it's gradual enough that you're buying into it and you're like, yes, I understand that this is a necessary moment for him. So I'm assuming then, Corbin, that when he takes his helmet off and him and baby Grogu have their moment, how did you feel at that moment?
Well, we talked about this last episode where we actually kind of predicted this, right? Where Grogu's going to have this moment where
this was on my list of wants. Yes. Yeah.
And they did such a good job with it. Obviously, Grogu reaching out, touching his helmet, and he's like, you know what? Face to face, like, we want to see each other, and that connection is so real. And I really appreciated the way they directed this scene, because in many cases what they will do in this circumstance is they will have this very touching scene between two characters, and they will catch shots of other people in the room
reacting, right? To it. Yeah,
they're like, oh, that's so, you know, trying to build it up. But it wasn't about, who cares what everyone else,
so intimate. Yeah,
who cares what everyone else is thinking in terms of him taking off the helmet? That's not about this, right?
Yeah.
It's all about their connection and being able to see each other face to face and essentially saying goodbye, right?
And I will say this, that when they did kind of look at other characters, they did flash to Cara Dune, and I thought it was really interesting that she was not looking at the back of his head or sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, he took his helmet off. She was watching like the intimate, tender moment that they were sharing together. And I appreciated that, because, you know, like, it could have been one of those things where everyone in the room's like, oh, what? He has dark hair? I thought he was blonde. But it was very much that it's almost like they all kind of they know him so well that seeing his face isn't shocking to them.
Yeah,
they're like,
matter.
Yeah, we know this guy, man. Like, we trust him. He's our bud. And me seeing his face is not going to take anything away from that. So I know that you said that your wife is still having a problem with the face. Good old Pedro Pascal's face. Not with the face. Pedro Pascal's face isn't quite doing it for her.
You'll have to ask her about that. I don't know. Like, you know, I made a comment, David Tomlinson, which I still stand by, but you know, that's okay.
No, so. Not at all. I will say though, how'd you feel about the acting with his face? Cause we've seen this actor, we've heard it in his voice, and he's kind of been the one that's done the really subtle stuff with his movements and stuff, but seeing him actually act in a very serious scene with his face.
No, it was great. I mean, again, we talk about like restraint and not overacting. I mean, it was wonderful. It was a touching moment. It wasn't too long. So I thought it was wonderful. And again, he is looking at a puppet, essentially.
Yes.
Right? So he's trying to make this connection with the thing that is, you know, built through animatronics.
But there's like two guys underneath him, like moving the hands and stuff.
I think it's probably a little bit more advanced than that, I believe, at this point, but maybe not. Maybe there are two hands that are in there. But I thought that was great. I thought it was wonderful. And that's obviously after we see Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. So let's get into that. Let's get into the build up of that. So we have Moff Gideon. We took him out. They capture him. We've got the Darksaber, and everybody meets up on the bridge of the ship. And the Dark Troopers suddenly start coming back. And I will say that I didn't think this was going to happen, but as soon as I saw all of those red dots on the screen, I was like, well, there's only one group that could be. It's like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And so they kind of barricade themselves in the bridge and are essentially waiting to get destroyed.
I was wondering what was the game plan there? And I know it's all happening very fast, but I would be panicking, right? Like I'd be like just tearing out of there, running as fast as I could to find a ship, you know, even if I made it like a third of the way there, just sitting hunkering in there, or I would blast like the window. So I would just get sucked out into space. Like, I don't want to get destroyed by these robots because they're not going to show any mercy. Like that build up and them like bashing through the door. And then obviously the X-Wing shows up and I'm like, what, like, who is this? And now looking back on it, it's obvious. I'm sure everyone's like, I knew it was Luke.
But
right?
I don't. Okay. To
but
be
the
fair,
timelines get messy, right? Where you're like, wait, where are we at? Like, who is this? Like,
okay, we have been talking about for weeks. Like, we were talking about who's going to take Grogu. Like, who is he going to call up to somebody? Who's going to come back? I will be honest. Never once did Luke Skywalker come to mind. And I think it's because I kind of felt like he was off the table. Because he's this iconic original trilogy. He is the Jedi that we first all knew. And so for whatever reason, I was like, he's too high up the food chain for them to bring him in. It has to be somebody.
Said one of his Padawans, you go get this little creature.
Right. It's got to be somebody from these other like lower tier TV shows, like an Ezra. Or, I mean, I even had a moment where I was like, did Ahsoka just show up? But when it took me a second. So looking in hindsight, I understand like the X-Wing should have been the first dead giveaway, but it literally took me until the green lightsaber and the gloved hand. And I was like, oh my God.
And he's pulling the hood off and everyone's like, what is this going to look like?
I know.
Like?
I was like, oh no. Am I crazy? Like who, like, is it an actor? Did they recast him? Like how dare they? So yeah.
And we had the moment with Princess Leia in Rogue One where at the time I was like, I was impressed. Like that's really hard to do is recreate someone. And obviously it didn't look perfect. So I was just like holding on because you know that people are going to destroy this if anything is off, but they did a phenomenal job with it, making it look just like Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. There were a few times that like his face looks a little two dimensional. Like he doesn't quite have, like if he had gone this way,
it was good.
His nose would have been flat.
Nope.
Just a teeny bit. Like it wasn't flawless. I'm being really, really nitpicky. It wasn't flawless, but it was just kind of like, I was in shock because it was like, it makes so much sense because who starts a new Jedi temple after Return of the Jedi? Luke does. So obviously he's the one that would come get Grogu. Like, hello, but I don't know.
You know what I think? I would say that Rogue One and The Mandalorian have done more to demonstrate the power of the Jedi than any of the movies. And this is what I mean by that. In Rogue One, we had Darth Vader who showed up on Princess Leia's frigate and just wreaked havoc, right? And it was, to me, it was traditional Jedi type skills, right? It wasn't this weird, like newer fangled Jedi-ness where you're flying through space or whatever before you die, blah, 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 blah. And then with Luke, you have all this buildup in episodes 4, 5, and 6 of this incredible new Jedi, but you never actually get to see him really fight.
You never see him at his prime ever.
The lasting image I have of Luke, when I think of him fighting, I think of him at Cloud City swinging at these objects flying at him. You know, and Darth Vader just toy with him, just like flicking his finger
he's
and throwing things at him.
He's so in over his head yeah. in that scene. You're and, just like...
And you're like, this isn't the only hope. This is like a depressing
hope. Our last hope.
Depressing hope, right? So having him take down those dark troopers, and it wasn't, again, he was just pushing
them. It
wasn't
flashy.
Yeah.
It was like... old school, when we would play Battlefront, like you have 3 moves. You either use your lightsaber, you push something, or you pull something.
Yeah.
And there wasn't anything. I mean, and if you were bad, you could use lightning, but I never did that because I felt guilty.
You're never bad.
So you're right. Like it was amazing to see. It was so nice to see him at his prime. And that last scene where
Dark Trooper.
Where he just crushes him and you're just like, oh my gosh. And again, like they set this up so well because we sat and watched Mando, who is legit, get his trash kicked by one of these. And Luke Skywalker comes in and takes out 40. And it's like, he's not even breathing hard, you know?
Yeah. And he's the true Jedi Knight, right? Where everyone's like, okay, you are the man and we will give you Grogu. No questions asked. Right.
Yeah.
So I think they have done such a great job in terms of these side projects of enhancing the image and what Jedi can do without getting a little crazy, right?
We'll get into that.
That's just my opinion.
Later. Yeah. So how do you feel about where we end up here? Because there's 2 endings to this. So we have ending number 1, which is just heart-wrenching. Like when that screen goes black after the elevator closes on
the
Luke
elevator
and Grogu,
closes, right?
You're just like, no. You can't end it here. I need more. So you have that ending, and then you have the surprise ending, which drops a little bombshell on the Mandalorian party.
Yeah, so the ending to this season, I really respect it because it's very easy, I think, to want to plant little seeds and get people hyped up. Oh, there's this little side story that we've got going on. Yeah, and you're just like, oh, man, like I've got to wait 9, 10, 12 months to see this.
Yeah.
So I think they wrapped up really well. I can walk away from it, moving on with my life.
I'm not going to be traumatized for months on end, but I'm still excited to see where they go.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so they did a great job with that, wrapped everything up. Everything's good. I'm happy. Wonderful.
I agree. Like, I feel like this was the most peaceful ending they could have given me. Like, I'm heartbroken and there are parts of it that like are heart-wrenching for me. And you're just like, what is going to happen? But I'm like, you know what? Everyone is in a safe place so far. And so we will pick up the next disaster a year from now. But I'm with you. I appreciate that they didn't make me wait to see what happened to Grogu, because that would have been terrible.
We essentially just dropped Grogu off at college.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, it's for the better. I'm sad.
Yeah.
And I'll see you every once in a while.
You're going to grow up and be so awesome. We'll see you soon.
Yeah. But it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of Boba Fett, I don't know. When I saw that, I was, I don't have much to like predict or whatever. I'm intrigued. I'm excited. He takes over Jabba's palace. He sits on the throne with Fennec, which part of me is a little bit, it's kind of bittersweet. It makes sense why, because I want to see Boba Fett in The Mandalorian. I love just the interaction between
them.
They have
Mando. They have a cool dynamic together. I'm with you.
Yeah, because it's complex. But there's a level of respect and understanding between them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we might see some mingling in the future, but I'm just like, what now? What, right? Like, so is this involved like the Hutts? Because they're a very powerful force in the Outer Rim.
Yeah.
That he's starting to take over their enterprises and starting to deal in the trade and all these things. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so who knows? I'm curious. I'm intrigued.
So here's my thing. When they originally dropped that bomb. Well, first of all, the ending of The Mandalorian, the last bomb that, like, guys, I literally threw my pillow across the room was when R2 showed up. Because Luke, they gave you, like, some hints, right? And by the time he took his hood off, you were like, oh my gosh. But then, like, R2 just rolls out of nowhere behind him, and I was like, I can't handle this anymore.
It was another one of those dumb moments where you're like, of course he's with him, right? But it's like, oh, it's R2-D2.
Yeah, but I'm so shocked that it's just, yeah.
And he did look a little 2D, you know, if he turned to the side, his nose.
Stop it. I'm serious. Go back and watch it. But okay. You guys know me. Like, that's
don't ruin it. Don't ruin it. It was great. They did.
Oh,
great
Corbin's
job.
Telling me not to ruin it. My, how the tables have turned.
Yes, they have.
So the Boba Fett thing, I actually was a tiny bit underwhelmed and confused. I feel like The Mandalorian this season has given us the Boba Fett that we all deserved and that we all wanted to see in the original trilogies, but it just wasn't, there wasn't space and time for it. He was this really intriguing character that kind of got a cult following and then kind of fell off the face of the earth. And we were all like, oh, I feel like The Mandalorian has remedied that. We've gotten to see Slave One. We've gotten to see Boba be awesome and get to know him more. But part of me is like, do I need a full series of him? And I don't want it to get sucked into like the politics of bounty hunterness and go kind of like prequel status where it gets bogged down. I trust Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau to do
a
good job.
That's the key right there. That's the
key. They are going to do a good job. But of the four series that they've announced that are going to be happening in the next few years, the Book of Boba Fett is probably closer to the bottom of my list. I'm more excited for Ahsoka and the Rangers of the New Republic. Is that what it's called?
Obviously, it's really exciting because we can't remember the name.
I know, guys. I'm so sorry. Because there's going to be four Star Wars television series going at the same time that all happen with The Mandalorian. So it'll be Mandalorian, Ahsoka, the New Republic, and now Boba Fett. It'll be fun to see how they let those kind of intermingle with each other. But Boba Fett, I feel like I've gotten my taste with, and I would rather see him with Mando than on his own throne with Fennec. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know. I'm like, I just like to.
They'll
you
prove
know,
me wrong, I'm sure. They usually do.
Let's keep going with it, right? Bring up, because they're doing a good job of bringing in different components and aspects, the political side. Then you've got the good versus the evil. Then you've also, and then what we're starting to explore now is that gray area. Like, what is everyone doing in between? And all the moral conflicts that they're having, their codes and their lifestyles. And so I'm intrigued to see what different component and aspect, because I think that's truly what they're trying to get at, is not just bring back an iconic character, but they want to explore a different component of society in the Star Wars realm.
So this is my last question for you. What do you think is, where do we go from here? Because the kind of main conflict of the first two seasons has seemingly been resolved. Grogu has a place. And I honestly think it's the best place that they could have picked for him. So this was the debate that people were talking about, is the name The Mandalorian, it could refer to a lot of different Mandalorians. So is Din Djarin, is he the main guy moving forward still? Do they shift the narrative to somebody else? Or if it is him, where do you go from here? What is the conflict and what part of his story do you start talking about?
For me, I would like to see them continue with Din Djarin, and kind of having him reunite with what is this culture that I've been so engrossed in, and kind of sifting through that a little bit more, bringing in those components of Mandalore, what's going on that planet. I think that'd be intriguing. I would be a little bit, on a personal level, I would be sad to see Bo-Katan turn into the antagonist.
The main person. Oh, the antagonist. Okay, I'm with you.
Right. That would be a little bit heartbreaking because, you know, when you watch Clone Wars and her process and her life and her connection to Ahsoka, right? Like, there's so much good and so much trying to do your best. And then to have that turn where, you, like, in some ways, I see the Darksaber as like the ring in The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Where when people get it, they're consumed by it. And you don't want to see Bo-Katan get consumed by what it represents and to have it completely change her outlook and her just desire for power. So I would be a little bit disappointed if it went that direction. I would understand it if it did, but it would be kind of hard to watch a character do that. So
it would be interesting also, because I think as we've talked about, like, the show does a really good job of not going extreme in either direction of good or evil. So I think there's potential for Bo-Katan to become the antagonist, but in the sense of, like, she is the conflict for Din Djarin moving forward, right? Because he has something that she wants.
Yeah.
And they have got to figure out, how do you settle this? And I'm with you, like, Din's got to be at the focus of it. If they shift the focus onto somebody else, I'm going to be sad. I'm not ready to be done with this character. I think there's still so much of his story and so much of him. Like, I'm attached. Baby Grogu was kind of the main attachment, I think, for a lot of people. The Mandalorian has been the main attachment for me since kind of the beginning. Like, I am so intrigued by this character. Please don't cut him loose and have him kind of replaced by somebody else.
I don't think they'll do that. I hope they don't, because we've learned in like something ridiculous, like The Office, where Michael Scott left. It was like, it's time, right? Like, wrap it up. It's done. And don't just try and milk it for all it's worth. And so with The Mandalorian, I would trust Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau to be like, you know what? He's not on board. We're not going to just try and conjure up some other Mandalorian. Yeah. We're going to move in a different direction, like Boba Fett or other avenues.
I agree with you though. I don't know. I can't think of another direction for them to go, except for the main string that's hanging out after the end of this episode is the Darksaber and Bo-Katan. I think those have kind of got to be the main thread moving forward. Yeah. And I think it fits perfectly within the story of the Mandalorian. Like, you have to take it back to Mandalore. And I think that's kind of narrative that we'd all be really excited to kind of explore. Cause it's something that not on live action, have we seen it explored? Clone Wars gets into it, but that was kind of at the peak. It'd be fun to see it, what it is now, and like, how do you fix it?
So in the meantime, if you have not watched the Clone Wars or Rebels, in preparation of the next season, I would encourage you to do that, just so you get more context into the Darksaber as well as Mandalore. And who knows, maybe it will help, but I think it provides context and helps you understand some of these characters a little bit better.
And it's just like, it's a fun, good time. I know some of us get a little poo-poo-y about it, like being a kid's show or what have you. And I've obviously only watched half of Clone Wars, but I've watched all of Star Wars Rebels. And yeah, like, you've got the kiddie moments that are like funny jokes and like kind of puns and things that are kind of silly, but there's some really good storytelling in both of those shows. And I mean, Dave Filoni, who is kind of like becoming the storytelling genius of Star Wars, he was one of the main head honchos on both of those shows. And so know that like the good storytelling and the good characterization, it's all there, even though it is a quote unquote kids television show. So if you're looking for some more Star Wars to get you through the next year, which I'm not happy about, a Star Wars list year, how is that even possible? Those would be fun things to dip into for sure.
So, you guys, that's our review of Chapter 16. Anything else you want to add? We good?
It was amazing. My dad was mad at me because I kept yelling, and he's like, I can't hear the TV. And
read the closed captions.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is what I said earlier today when I was talking to somebody. There are so many different opinions on the prequels and on the new trilogy, and we'll get into those next year when we tackle Star Wars movies. But I think The Mandalorian has done more for Star Wars in terms of unifying people under one story. I think it's done just as much, if not more, than A New Hope did originally. I don't know that there's been a Star Wars movie since that has really captured everyone's interest, and everybody can agree that it's spectacular. So if you have not given The Mandalorian a try and you're not even a Star Wars fan, just watch it for pure entertainment factor, because it's good storytelling and it's a good ride.
Yep, absolutely. So thank you so much for listening to our opinions, ideas, thoughts on Star Wars. This was a new little world for us. We're going to continue that this next season, and we will talk to you then.
Hi, guys.
This has been another episode of The Neverland Files. Subscribe and review and join the conversation over on Instagram @The Neverland Files. Thanks for listening.